TV.
Greetings, truth lovers and truth seekers. I am Martin Zender, the world's most outspoken Bible scholar, called that for a reason. Just watch for another 5 minutes. You'll find out. It comes out in every video. I can't help it. But lately, the topic has been deadly serious, talking about Satan and his tactics, how his tactics have changed since the cross, and how he has now involved Christianity in battling a false enemy. The false enemy is sex. Christianity is sex obsessed, not with doing it, but with battling it. And while they are engaged battling in this self-invented front, Satan is working the greatest evil of all through their midst. And that is announcing the horror, the terror, although Christianity calls it the gospel of eternal torment. Talk about calling what is good evil and evil good. I mean, this is your very definition right here. Calling what God created to be enjoyed, sex, calling that evil, basically, in many ways, calling it evil, and calling the most condemnable, horrible falsehood, eternal torment, calling that good, calling that part of the gospel. We must announce that you are in danger of going to eternal hellfire if you don't love God back, if you don't return his affections, you're doomed. So they call that message good, which is, of course, an evil. And then they call a good, God created sex to be enjoyed. God created females to be beautiful and to help all of us survive. And they call that evil. It's really incredible. But it's been happening for years, really, since the cross. And it is an example of Satan's ingenuity. Now, what I'm going to do is read a few sections from one of my newsletters, because I've written about this for a long time. And I'm going to be quoting myself from one of my newsletters. Actually, I'm going to be dipping into two newsletters. My newsletter called ZWTF, which I used to trip people up with that, ZWTF. I got criticized for that by some uptight religionists. Martin, don't you know what WTF stands for? How could you call your newsletter that? And I said, I don't even know what you're talking about. This acronym stands for zapping you whenever thoughts flow. And that's what I have at the bottom here of the newsletter, which I published from, I think I published it like from 2010 to 2019 or something like that, 2020. Yeah, ZWTF. And so I liked to trip people up that way, saying to them, well, you have evil thoughts. If you thought WTF meant what the fuck, of course, you're the crazy one. It means whenever thoughts flow. I'm shocked at you. I'm ashamed of you. I like to trap the self-righteous in traps that they themselves set. This particular article is called The New Circumcisionists, and this was a revelation to me. I pass this on to you today. The subtitle is How Sex is Satan's Playground, and it is sex is used by the Christian religion to condemn you, to get people to thinking about their sin. That's their obsession. The Christian obsession is with sin. They're obsessed with sin, of how to eliminate it, ignoring the fact that Jesus Christ already died for it successfully, so I might add. But in order to keep you from having high thoughts, beautiful thoughts, glorious thoughts about God, about salvation, about his son, Jesus Christ, no, get your eyes from the world above down to earth. In fact, look down until you can see your sexual parts. Okay, do you see your sexual parts? Now stop looking there. But they must be controlled. They must be managed according to our rules, not according to Leviticus chapter 20, not according to the Apostle Paul, but according to our rules and our definition of sexual immorality. And they will condemn you. And these are what I call the new circumcisionists. You'll see what I mean as we get started here. The basic premise is, in the old days, the circumcisionists hated and therefore fought the Apostle Paul's message of pure grace. The circumcisionists said grace was not enough to save people, right? You had to add law, and the Galatians fell for it. Paul wrote the famous letter to the Galatians. The circumcisionists, they wanted to boast in their flesh. All religious people want that. They want to boast in their flesh. This was their bottom line. And so my plea to the reader is to look behind the ritual they promoted, and back in that day it was circumcision. Look behind the ritual to see what animated it, what animated these really ultimately selfish people. What they wanted was a piece of the pie. They wanted credit for what they were doing because they wanted to eventually boast at the same time, this is very necessary for them, condemning other people. Listen to Paul in Galatians chapter 6, verses 12 and 13. Whoever are wanting you to put on a fair face in the flesh. Paul is just getting right at the motive here. These are compelling you to circumcise. And see, he gets right to the heart of it at the beginning. Whoever are wanting to put on a fair face in the flesh, who just want to look good, who want to feel good about themselves, who want to be self-righteous and want to condemn other people. These are those who are compelling you to circumcise. Again, this is Galatians 6, verses 12 and 13. Only that they may not be persecuted for the cross of Christ. They think they're covering their bases. We don't want to be persecuted. And so they felt, and Christians do this today, that freedom is dangerous. Oh, freedom is very dangerous to the circumcisionists and to the modern Christian. Freedom is dangerous. And they don't want to be persecuted. I'm persecuted. Why am I persecuted? Because I teach the grace of God. And I am told, by even my own son told me this, and my former friend Johnny Green told me this, other people have told me this, because I teach grace so loudly and certainly and with such conviction, I am inciting people to sin. I'm making salvation too easy. Greasy grace, as they call it. But I'm promoting freedom. Freedom is based on grace, and grace is a power that will actually curb the appetites of the flesh. But anyway, here are these people. Paul's got it nailed down here. They don't want to be persecuted for the cross. For not even they who are circumcising are maintaining law, of course. All these people were telling you how to behave in the flesh. When the lights are off and they're alone, they're not behaving. I guarantee them to you. If they are, it is a feat of pure asceticism, and they are a volcano, Vesuvius, Mount St. Helens, take your pick, ready to blow. For not even they who are circumcising are maintaining law, but they want you to be circumcised, that they should be boasting in that flesh of yours. Okay, there it is. They want converts. They are the ones who draw up the laws and the regulations. They want converts. This is the pastor. This is your modern day pastor, your youth pastor. They want converts who adhere to their blueprint for morality. And it's their blueprint for morality. It's not God's. This is especially so in the realm of sex. Especially so. Their blueprint is nowhere near what God's blueprint is. Because like I told you yesterday, this is one of the smartest things I said yesterday. I said a lot of smart things yesterday. I really have to struggled. What was the smartest thing I said? And it was that the Pharisees added laws to the 613 laws of Moses. They added laws. It wasn't enough for them. No, it didn't suit them. God should have consulted them as to what constituted sin. Well, that is never more true than of Christians today, especially in the realm of sex. They have invented sexual sins that do not exist and that didn't even exist in the law of Moses, the toughest law of the land. And today, the circumcisionists are reborn. Of course, they're always with us. Same spirit, same agitating spirit, same self-righteousness, same pride. The difference is that they are not promoting a rite performed upon the male member. Oh, no, that's old school. No. Don't get me wrong. It's still about the male member. Oh, it's still all about the male member. Just not about snipping the end of it. It's about controlling it to whatever degree the new circumcisionists deem appropriate. Yes, the new circumcisionists are the sex police of today. The circumcisionists of Galatians who are vexing the members of the ecclesia in Galatia. They are now the new circumcisionists, and they're still hassling your male member. They're still bugging the crap out of it. But instead of snipping the end of it off, they are telling you, you must control it. Don't, for God's sake, don't touch it. Don't make it go up and down with your own hand, because then something terrible / wonderful might happen. Do you remember Matthew Holland making a video telling us that masturbation was evil? He called it yucky and dirty, and he said that anybody who masturbated was a cuck, a cuckold. It was just a nightmare of a thing to listen to and to watch. And if you recall, I was so agitated after the end of that video. Couldn't believe that Matthew Holland, my friend, a mature believer in Christ, has this thing where he's under the influence of Baal Peor. Actually, Baal Peor, again, has obsessed the Christian religion with sex, not with indulging it, but preventing it, preventing any thought of it. No unclean thoughts. You can't look at any woman appreciatively except for your wife. No, you can't even look at another woman appreciatively. Oh, no. Even if you're not married, don't do it. One glance at an attractive woman will lead inevitably to raping her and then dismembering her in your basement, putting her body parts in trash bags and storing them in the freezer for later use. That is what they think. That is what these new circumcisionists think, these condemners, these people who are obsessed with the male member. It's the male member that's the problem, according to them. Oh, females are pure and holy. Females are pure. Females can collect beautiful pillows. They can plant flowers. They can do ceramics. They can admire beauty anywhere. But males, oh, my God. My God. If a male, for a second, even looks at a naked woman in an art museum for too long, huh, he's in big trouble. He's a dirty, perverted pig. You can't even look at the Venus de Milo at the Louvre. No, don't look at the Venus de Milo. Some men have actually been caught staring at the Venus de Milo's naked tits. I know. Lust. Lust. We all know lust is evil. Strange. Concordant version says that Jesus lusted to eat the Passover with his disciples. If lust is evil, how come Jesus did it? Lust just means desire. The Concordant version, I wish they'd have been consistent. They translated it, the same word, desire sometimes and lust other times. Wish they hadn't. I wish they'd have said Jesus lusted to eat the Passover with his disciples. They should have said that. Or else other places where they used lust make it desire. It's just desire. It's not the desire that's evil. It's what you do with the desire. We'll have crazy desires. And they're normal. Because as soon as you start trying to like control your thought life and this book that I wrote a book against, Every Man's Battle, they were even telling you how to control your dreams. These people, these authors, Arterburn and Stoker. I said Stoker, not Stroker. These guys actually were instructing men how to get rid of their sexual dreams because their dreams were sinful. Their dream life was sinful. Yeah, I'm talking about dreams at night while you're sleeping. You have wild sex dream at night. It's just like bad, bad, very bad. And they have techniques how to control it. There's a chapter in that book to men of how to bounce your eyes. Bounce your eyes. As soon as you look, as soon as you see, as soon as you notice beauty. Yeah, beauty is evil. Beauty is a sin. As soon as you notice beauty, you're supposed to bounce your eyes from it. I mean, flowers are fine. Women can look at flowers, but men cannot look at animated beauty in the form of a female. No, flowers are pure and holy. Beautiful women are evil. Evil. So women, you're allowed to look at flowers for hours. You can spend hours with the flowers. We take shit for looking at the tit. Woo, it's not good. We condemned. Can't even look at the Venus de Milo. This is the battleground today in Christianity. Can you believe it? Can you believe what they're obsessed with? I mean, they're obsessed with it. And them trying to prevent it, they create an obsessive desire for it. It's Romans 7 principle. Paul says, I had not thought of coveting till the law said, thou shalt not covet. Whenever you prohibit something, especially religiously, especially something that God declares to be good, like the body. When God created Adam and Eve, he said it was good. He created Eve. It was good. What was good? All of her. Every single part of her. Yes. Everything was good. It was good. Christianity calls it evil. What about the male member? The famous thing we're talking about here. God took a look at it. God made it. Then he looked at it. And the first thing it did when Eve showed up was it graduated from a state of relaxation to a state of profound attention. It's the first time that ever happened. And God looked directly at it. And what did God do? Did he jump back in surprise? Who? What's that? I didn't intend for that to happen. This is terrible. You're not even married yet. Are you married to Eve yet? No, I just created her. You're not allowed to do that until you're married. God took one look at it. No, God took one look at it and said, it is good. He looked right at it in all its flagpole extremity and said, it's good. You see that? Called all the angels to him. I want you to look at this. This is the first erection in the history of humanity. Everybody come look at this. Look at that thing. Look at that thing. You see that? Yes, they all admitted they saw it. God says, it's good. It's good. Probably said it like that. It's good. It's really good. But Christians call it evil. How dare they? And they call eternal torment good. They call the male erection evil. And they call eternal torment good. What? As Elmer Fudd would say, there's something very, very screwy going on around here. Yeah, I'll say, Elmer. Our culture is prejudiced against sex. And it's because of the damn pilgrims, because of the Elizabethan Moors or the Victorians, you know, and it all starts with Bale Pure, if you ask me. Our culture is prejudiced against sex because of our religious roots. There you go. See, I said it in this article. When did I write this? July 6, 2013. I will link it down here, link it below if you want to read the whole thing. I would recommend you do it. Because of our religious roots, most people in this country consider sex dirty. They do. They really do. They're afraid to death of it. People start talking about it, they get nervous. They start scratching the back of their necks whenever nobody wants to talk to their kids about sex. I talk to my kids about sex. I couldn't wait. Most parents hate it. It's like, oh my God, they put it off as long as possible. I gathered my boys around me. I said, hey, boys, this is how. And in fact, every February, when the, about this time of year, the Sports Illustrated swimsuit edition came out, right? And my boys were interested in it when they got to a certain age, you know, 10, 11, 12. And instead of pretending it didn't exist, instead of prohibiting it, instead of saying, you cannot look at this, I saw you looking at that Sports Illustrated cover. Daddy, how come there's a beautiful woman in a very small swimsuit instead of a football player? Well, because, son, it's the annual Sports Illustrated swimsuit edition. That's why, son. Dan, I feel strangely pleasurable looking at that. Well, there's a reason for that, son, because God also sees it and gets pleasure out of it because he made it, and at the dawn of creation, he called it good. So instead of prohibiting this thing, I said, what? Why don't we buy it and look at it together? So we did. My wife didn't like it because she was a little bit religious. I wasn't. I was free. So free. And so I would take my boys out to dinner when they got to be the right age. I'd take them out to dinner to Red Lobster. We'd buy the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue and look at it together. And because of that, my boys grew up normal. They didn't obsess over it. Because I didn't make it a freakish, prohibited thing. I'm not a genius. It's Romans chapter 7. Paul, I didn't even think about looking at the Sports Illustrated swimsuit edition until someone told me, you shall not ever look at that Sports Illustrated swimsuit edition, the one with the girl in the tiny black shiny bikini. No, you should never look at that. Oh, Paul, I never thought of looking at it until this moron said don't look at it. And then after that, all I wanted to do was look at it. So I became obsessed over it. That's the principle. It's human nature. It's so true. When I was a kid, my dad would drink beer. And he would say, son, would you like a sip of beer? Yeah, sure. And took a sip of that one. Well, that's more than a sip, I guess. It was more like, it's like, how can you drink this crap? Don't say the word crap, son. No, I'm sorry, Daddy. What should I say? Say shit. No, that didn't happen. But the beer thing did happen. And alcohol was not a prohibited thing in my household. My parents drank it socially. They had friends over. They played bridge. They had this mysterious cabinet. Come to find out it was a liquor cabinet. And they would make drinks for themselves and their friends. It was an open thing. It was a normal thing in my house. So I never became obsessed over alcohol. Never. I'm not addicted to alcohol. I drink when I need to. My voice is doing pretty good today, but it's a normal thing. Same with sexual topics. Normal, perfect, lovely. No obsessions, no addictions. I'm telling you, I believe most addictions come via religious prohibitions. So most people in this country, though, especially the religious people, consider sex dirty. They won't admit to their prejudice against it, but their anger over perceived sexual licentiousness in others. And this is all about perceived sexual licentiousness. This is all about what people think is wrong. So many topics I've broached with people in the arena of sex, and they go, oh, that's horrible. That's nasty. That's terrible. I said, really? Why? Why? Well, because they don't know why. God dislikes that. Where does it say in the scriptures that God dislikes this particular sexual thing we're discussing? It just does. No, that's the problem. So it's perceived sexual licentiousness, and it is especially in others. These are complete hypocrites, these people. Complete hypocrites. If they're not practicing it themselves, whatever it is, they're noticing it in others. But again, I posit again to you that when the lights go out and they're on their own, they're all doing it. But then they're whatever it is, insert your own it there. But they're ashamed. They feel shame after they do something or look at something or entertain some thought or admire the neighbor next door, and they suddenly feel, instead of thinking, oh, that's normal, okay, walk away. Instead, they've been so trained to think of it as the ultimate failure against God that they now become obsessed over it and they can't stop thinking about it. It's incredible. I've seen it again and again and again. I'll give you one quick example, then I got to end this show. At the beginning of my book, Flawed by Design, I wrote the incident of the woman that ends up at Jesus' feet and pours perfume on his feet and washes his feet with her hair. And the Pharisees who were sitting there, or the priests, whoever they were, they, doesn't he know what kind of woman this is? And so the book called Flawed by Design, I decided to take author's liberty, a writing liberty, and write a prequel. How did this woman end up at Jesus's feet? So I had her becoming ashamed of what she did in the darkness of her own room. And she goes out into the street one day and she just opens her dress, opens her clothing to God, exposes her breasts. And I use the word breasts because that's what they are. She exposes her breasts and she takes out oil and she just rubs her breasts with oil and shakes them before God and says, this is who you made me. This is who I am. And it's like, why did you make me thus? That kind of thing. Shaking her breasts before the one who created them. And people, some people, I mean, I read that and I just weep because of the honesty, because of, and then the tender response. She expects to be struck by lightning, but instead, God, she feels the arm of God around her and comforting her, and she weeps. And I cry reading that. It's so touching. It's so deep. And you know what? Some people, I swear to you, some members of the body of Christ said, I had to stop reading that book. Why? It's one of the best books I ever wrote. When you mentioned breasts, you had that woman at the beginning. What? I'm not kidding. More than one member of the body of Christ couldn't get past the word breast. I had already moved on. Like, okay, here's this woman shaking her breasts at God, and then I go to page 3, and then I write the rest of the book. But they can't get past breasts. Oh, God. He mentioned breasts. Why did he do that? I don't know. Maybe you have a problem with breasts. I don't have a problem. Not at all. You have a problem. That's what I told these people. They told me I had a problem. I said, no, you have a big problem. I said, you're obsessed. I told a friend of mine this, you're obsessed with breasts. You're obsessed. I'm not. I wrote about them and moved on. I haven't thought about it since, except when I read it and I cry because it's so beautiful, such magnificent writing. If you haven't read Flawed by Design, please order it. These people are sexual perverts, making up laws where there are no laws to suit their own sexual hang-ups. They all have sexual hang-ups. They all have been damaged in some way, and they freak out over things that God says are normal. In fact, things that God instituted, things that God called good, they freak out about. Why? Because they're damaged. They're ashamed. Something bad happened to them, and they feel shame, and they feel worthless, and they attribute to God their problem. That's called projection. But the word I choose to use today is celebration.